presence and the members of his. You have the Chief Justice and members of the greatest court on earth representing the judicial branch of the government. And you have the second most powerful man, sometimes I think he's the first most powerful man in the government of the United States, and the Speaker of the House of Representatives, which represents the legislative branch of the government. It would be rather hard for me to deny that I'm friendly to lawyers. The record would speak against me if I should deny it. Six of the nine members of my cabinet are lawyers. So are quite a few other top officials of the executive branch. When you couple this with the fact that over half the House of Representatives and about two-thirds of the Senate are lawyers, as well as all our federal judges, of course, you can see that so far as the government of the United States is concerned, the legal profession is not just a passing fancy, it's probably here to stay. Our lawyers have a primary responsibility in the maintenance of justice. This is particularly true of the government lawyer, whose first devotion must be to the public interest. The public interest does not mean only the interest of the government. It means also the protection of the rights of individual citizens. Our concept of justice represents a basic difference between our system of government, and that of the totalitarian states. Justice is the foundation of true democracy. Our system of justice preserves the freedom and dignity of the individual and his right to think and speak as he feels and to worship as he pleases. It protects him in the assertion of his rights, even against his own government. It makes certain that his assertion of those rights will be fairly considered and justly decided. But there is in the world today a tyrannical force which does not recognize justice as we know it. It's a force which crushes the minds and bodies of those under its control and seeks to enlarge itself by aggression and by false promises of freedom and economic security. Wherever this force extends, there is no freedom of speech, no freedom of religion, no freedom even of opinion. The state is the all-powerful arbiter of men's words and acts. Human dignity and human freedom are meaningless. Against this tyrannical force, which we know as communism, the United States stands as the great champion of freedom. Against this force, the United States has developed and put into effect a positive program to strengthen freedom and real democracy. Our program is shaped to strengthen the United States and to help other free nations protect themselves against aggression and subversion. Since the end of the war, we've taken far-seeing steps, unprecedented in the history of the world, to help other free nations rebuild from the destruction of war and strengthen their democratic institutions. Our programs of foreign aid have made it possible for these free nations to resist communist aggression. The Greek-Turkish aid program, the Marshall Plan, the North Atlantic Treaty, the military assistance program, and our support of the United Nations are the major elements in our central policy to work for a peaceful and a prosperous world. We've taken the leadership in aiding underdeveloped areas and in reducing trade barriers between nations. We're keeping our military forces strong and alert, and we're giving meaning and strength to our joint defense arrangements with other countries. We've done all this because it represents enlightened self-interest. We know that the greatest threat to us does not come from the communists in this country, where they are a noisy but a small and universally despised group. greatest threat comes from communist imperialism abroad, where the center of its military and economic strength lies. The real danger is that communism might overrun other free nations and thus strengthen itself for an ultimate attack upon us. But although communism is not a major force in this country, we're taking no chances on its becoming a strong force. On the one hand, we are working to create conditions in the United States in which communism cannot possibly thrive. On the other hand, we're striking hard blows at communist subversion wherever it's found. We're vigorously pressing domestic programs to improve the standard of living of our people, to assure equal opportunities for all, to promote their health and education, and their security and freedom. These programs are not specifically designed as anti-communist measures. We would have had them even if there were not a single communist in the world. Nevertheless, they are among the strongest anti-communist weapons in our whole arsenal. Communism has little appeal for people who are healthy, well-educated, prosperous, and free. Moreover, there are few things that will do more to prevent the communists from winning followers in other lands than a demonstration by the United States that democracy truly means a better, freer life for everybody. While we've been working to improve our democracy, we've been fully aware of the threat of communist subversion within our own borders. Through the Federal Bureau of Investigation and other security forces, through prosecutions in the courts by the Department of Justice, through our federal employee loyalty program, and in many other ways, we have vigorously attacked communists wherever their activities become a threat to our liberties. There's been so much confusion recently about who's doing what to defeat communism in this country that I think the record should be set straight. This administration has fought communism with action and not with just words. We've carried on this fight with every law in the statute book. And we've recommended new laws when we found they were necessary and could be framed without impairing the very freedoms we are seeking to protect. No known instance of communist subversion, or any other kind of subversion, has gone uninvestigated. No case where the facts warranted has gone unprosecuted. We have prosecuted and obtained convictions of 11 top-ranking members of the Communist Party in this country. We have successfully prosecuted many other persons for crimes related to communism. We have also prosecuted and obtained conviction of a large number of alleged communists on charge of contempt for refusing to testify before federal grand juries or congressional committees, and those prosecutions have been carried on by the Attorney General's office in the executive part of the government. We now have under investigation the cases of over 1,000 citizens to determine whether steps should be taken to revoke their citizenship on grounds involving subversive activities. 138 persons are under orders of deportation on grounds involving communism. There is no area of American life in which the Communist Party is making headway, except maybe in the deluded minds of some people. The communists have done their best to penetrate labor unions and the government, but they're being successfully fought on both fronts. Labor's been doing a splendid job of cleaning its house. In the federal government, the employee loyalty program has been an outstanding success, and you government lawyers have contributed greatly to its results. I set up the employee loyalty program 3 years ago. 3 years ago. With two objectives in mind. I was determined, as far as it was humanly possible, to see that no disloyal person should be employed by our government, whether he was a communist or a Native American fascist of the Silver Shirt or Ku Klux Klan variety. I was equally determined that loyal government employees should be protected against accusations which were false, malicious, and ill-founded. And that's just as important as the other part of the program. The loyalty program was drafted by able and experienced people to protect the security of the government and to safeguard the rights of its employees. Rights of its employees. It is the first time in the history of this country that we have had such a program. The communists and their friends, as well as some sincere idealists, say that it is too drastic. The false patriots and even some honest reactionaries say that it is entirely too mild. They want us to dismiss employees on the basis of unsupported charges. They actually resent the democratic safeguards of the loyalty program. All this confirms me in the conviction that it is a sound and effective program conceived and carried out in the American tradition. And that's just what it is. The FBI, the agency, loyalty boards, the loyalty boards, the loyalty boards, the loyalty boards, the loyalty review board, have quality review board, have quality review board, the loyalty boards, the loyalty review board, have quality review board, have quietly and effectively carried out their job of protecting the integrity and security of the government of the United States. The loyalty review board is the central organization which directs the whole program. It is divided about half and half between Democrats and Republicans, and is headed by a distinguished Republican lawyer, Mr. Seth Richardson, who served as Assistant Attorney General of the United States under President Hoover. Under the supervision of this board, the loyalty program has rid the government of all employees who were found to be disloyal, and they were only a tiny fraction of 1%. Not a single person who has been adjudged to be a communist or otherwise disloyal remains on the government payroll today. The able men charged with carrying out the loyalty program know that keeping disloyal persons out of the government is a business which must be done carefully and objectively. They know that the job cannot be done by publicly denouncing men as communists without having evidence to support such a charge, or by blackening the characters of persons because their views are different from those of the accuser, or by hurling sensational accusations based on gossip, hearsay, or maybe just a hunch. They know that no one whose principal concern was the security of this country would try to do it that way. They know that anyone who had information about communist activity or who placed the security of this country above selfish or partisan considerations would turn that information over to the FBI so that it could be properly investigated and the necessary action taken. I've been surprised to see how much ignorance and misunderstanding there is about this loyalty program, even on the part of people who should know better. It's occurred to me that perhaps they do know better, or perhaps there is some element of politics in their accusations. Of course, that couldn't be the case. A large part of the hue and cry about the loyalty program is centered on my refusal to turn over to a congressional committee confidential loyalty files concerning files concerning files concerning files concerning. I've already stated several times the reasons why these files must not be disclosed. I want to restate them briefly now.